This is The Strategist, episode 1299. My name is Corey Hogan. With me, as always, Stephen Carter, Zane Velji. Gentlemen.
What are you doing?
It's super easy.
Yeah.
It's super easy. All this time, I've been thinking that that was hard. That wasn't particularly hard.
Zane, I actually have an extra microphone.
He wasn't good at it. Can we talk about how bad he was at it?
He was good.
Can we spend the entire episode? There was no energy. There
was
no flair.
It was my first time ever.
There's
1,299 episodes.
I have skipped several episodes.
I have ever done it. You don't listen to those other episodes.
If
you want to record the intro,
yeah,
you bring your microphone.
Get a microphone.
Get a fucking microphone.
Jesus.
What if somebody was listening to the podcast? Zane.
No, listen.
What if somebody was listening to the podcast for the first time?
Yep.
And they were only going to give it 3 seconds before they decided to move on. What we call the Zane Velji love moment.
Yeah.
What if, man?
Could have been.
They gave it a quick ZVLM, as I call it. They'd be like, wow, this is audio quality reminiscent of the Hurly Burly, a podcast that consistently ranks higher than us in the ratings.
That's kind of bullshit.
And I think the reason is because of their poor audio quality. Okay, I'm trying to isolate all the variables, okay? And I think it's I tried white last time and it wasn't white, so I've isolated that variable. No, I think it has actually poor audio quality. And okay. I think that's the reason that they're above us on the charts.
That's a good point.
So if we don't outpace them with this episode, which is going to be a fucking banger, okay? Because it's in your control, Corey. It's going to be a banger. Then I'll have to isolate another variable and figure it out. How does that sound, Carter?
I'm trying to figure out why there's a harp sitting beside you.
Is there a harp? Oh, there is a harp sitting beside me. My wife used to play the harp.
Oh.
She still can play the harp.
Well, get her down here and let's record some intro music. God. We've been missing out on this the whole time. It'd be fantastic.
A very unnecessary instrument, let me tell you that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Wow. Truly.
Good. Carter, what else do you want to get out of the way? Before we jump in,
you know what? I had a week so bad in AFL predictions, I tied with Corey. That's how bad my week was.
I recently found out that you guys aren't fucking shitting me when you say that
there's a whole league.
You are in a fantasy league. Yeah, no, this is news to me. This was news to me as of like last week.
Yeah, well,
when Corey said, oh no, this is not news. This should not be news.
It's real.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Yeah, you were invited, but you didn't join.
Mm.
I don't know how to use the Discord card.
This isn't.
I don't know if he actually was invited. To be fair,
we thought about inviting you, but we chose not to.
That's more accurate.
Yeah.
Well, is a little bit of a stretch, but
yeah, ski season's over, guys. There's still 2 more weeks, but I'm not skiing anymore.
Okay.
So Corey, you and I can't go skiing this year.
I was going to go this weekend too,
but
I guess it's over now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's move it on to our first segment. Our first segment, it isn't a deal until Jagmeet Singh sings. That is right, guys. Jagmeet Singh, let's talk about this.
Hold on.
Before
we do, are you okay to do this? I mean, there's only 3 hours and 11 minutes left before the membership cutoff for the Alberta NDP.
Yeah.
And I know it's a very tight race. Do you need to
move themselves?
Listen,
that's what I've
heard. Zane, you don't want to be complacent.
You don't want to be complacent.
I read in an email. Complacent.
You do not want to be complacent.
Let's build a winning coalition today, is what I'd suggest. Are you guys in? I haven't asked you. Do you guys want to join?
I actually did buy a membership today.
Oh. Did you go to Nenshi.ca to purchase your membership? That's not the right way to do it. I heard there are some memberships that don't come from Nenshi.ca. Not as good.
I bought mine straight from the source. I actually called.
Which would be what?
I called Rachel. And I said, Rach.
Yeah.
Because we're like that, right?
Carter,
she's like Cart.
Carter, there's all
and I'm like Rach.
Rach and Cart. I noticed that she's abbreviating your last name.
Well, it's because people call me Carter, you know?
Yeah.
That's what people call me. So I said
Rach,
and she said
show.
Carter. And the next thing you know...
Wait, did she say Carter or Cart?
Carts.
This story is falling apart.
It's falling apart very quickly.
She said, Carter, you
very
carts.
Quickly.
You carts me. No, that's not right.
Wait,
anyways, I called
her.
I got a membership straight from the source.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll tell you something.
Sure she wasn't,
Lou
she just
protested.
Ripped you off for $10.
Lou protested my membership. He's like, you're not a real New Democrat. And I said, you guys let Nenshi run. What do you care about new Democrats now? There's no blood test. So I'm a new Democrat.
You've never been a... Carter, have you been a member in good standing of any political party that you've assisted with? That's a serious question.
In good standing? No.
Yeah.
No.
Wait, can I ask? I don't think I've ever asked you this. Were you a PC member when you helped Redford?
There's absolutely no evidence that I wasn't.
I mean, you must have. You bought a membership for that leadership.
I don't think I did, because I don't think I voted.
Huh.
Not even to help her at the end?
If you had lost by a vote, I mean, that feels like that would have been pretty good.
Yeah. If I'd lost by a vote, I still would have said we won. But it was fine. Yeah. We won, so it didn't matter. Yeah, I honestly don't think I was a member of the PCs.
Were you a member of the Wild Rose when you
No, I was definitely not a member of the Wild Rose.
Okay.
How about the Alberta Party?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, what would be the point?
Do we want to do a whole segment on the Alberta Party leadership?
No,
I assume that's what you're doing on the back nine of this episode.
They've actually just leapfrogged the entire Alberta NDP system with an Alberta Party leadership that was truncated and produced a result.
Yeah,
which is more than I thought they would.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So Carter, thank you for joining the campaign. Now is not a time to be complacent. I agree with you guys completely. Let's talk about Jagmeet Singh, Corey.
Okay.
Corey, Jagmeet Singh is saying that he is not decided on whether he'll vote for Justin Trudeau's federal budget introduced last week. This, of course, is an entire episode we covered off where we talked about the highs, the lows, the strategy, the political strategy of the Liberal budget trying to go public with some of their political aims and ambitions, quantitative political aims and ambitions. Well, Jagmeet Singh, who's in a supply and confidence agreement with the Liberals, Corey, is saying, well, you know, we got the things we wanted. National PharmaCare, it's underway. The school lunch program, it's underway. But there's concerns that we have inadequate funding for national disability benefit. There's other things that we need. Tell me what Jagmeet Singh is doing here. I actually want to spend a fair bit of time talking about the strategy when people more than likely know the outcome of where you're going to land. Does this song and dance do anything for anybody who's at the heart of this discussion? And we'll get to it in multiple ways. But Corey, give me your sense of what Jagmeet Singh is trying to do, because this is not just a one-off one article. This is making the headlines in multiple political newspapers, multiple political columnists talking about, oh shit, Jagmeet Singh. This guy, who knows what he's going to do next. What's happening here?
Yeah. Well, so much for the no surprises supply and confidence agreement that said that these kinds of games wouldn't be played, right? But what is he doing? Okay, let's first of all isolate what he is not doing. He is not actually bringing the government down, right? And the way I know this, if I'm going to be totally frank, is you don't do it on the disability benefit. Now, I'm not saying that the disability benefit isn't important. I'm not saying that a lot of Canadians wouldn't, find great solace in increased disability benefit, but it is not broad-based enough on which to run an election. It's certainly not one that you are going to use to separate from the pack, as you've got the Conservative saying, axe the tax, and the Liberals saying, only axe the tax a little, I think. Is that their I don't even strategy. Know their position.
Yeah, that's
correct. Yeah, it's just a little bit of axing on tax.
Yeah. Axe some tax. Yeah. It's very unlikely to me that this is actually the thing they're going to bring down, because you can easily imagine people in that space and just progressive Canadians more generally being like, what the absolute fuck did you just do here? Now we have a government that's not at all aligned with our interests. And so that's what he's not doing, is trying to bring down the government. That sort of leaves basically one thing that he is doing, which is mugging for the camera, which is trying to create that drama, trying to have people remember that he exists so that the conversation can come to him instead of it being about Justin Trudeau's budget and Pierre Poilievre's response to it, right? It's his way to try to force himself into this story. And on a certain level, I don't blame the media for covering it, because I guess, but on another level, it's like, none of you are this dumb. I know you all know this is not a serious threat. So is there not a way we can bring in a little bit more critical thought and analysis here and just say, effectively, why is Singh pretending he's going to bring down the government? He's not bringing down the government.
Carter, let's take the media out for a second. Let's talk about the political strategy in terms of what Singh is trying to do, media coverage or not. Do you agree with Corey just on the basics here that he is not going to take down the government? Like, let's just get some table stakes and then we'll build on top.
Yeah, I mean, how much did we hear about this disability benefit over the last 3 or 4 months. I mean, it just hasn't been something that's been in the public consciousness. And you're not going to bring down the government on something that doesn't have significant existing momentum.
That is the point. You are not going to have a situation where you learn of the existence of a demand for a heightened disability benefit and learn the government went down on it at the same moment, which is basically what you would have.
Well, Carter, should he have chosen like a better strategy? Should he have chosen a better topic to make this threat seem more credible?
Well,
if we're talking about the politics here,
he should have had a strategy that lasted for more than a day. You know, what he could have been doing is signaling this is something that's super important to the NDP, like he did with PharmaCare, like he did with daycare. And if these things don't get done, then I think that we have a problem with the entire relationship. And he did signal that. He signaled that with PharmaCare, and he got it right. And he signaled that with the food program that we belittled out of the budget, you know, $1 billion for feeding children that really isn't in the federal mandate at all. Not that children shouldn't be fed, of course, but you know, it's a provincial responsibility. It should absolutely live with the provinces. But he signaled those things. He got those things, and I would argue that he didn't signal the children's lunch program very much at all. But he still got it. So what the hell is he talking about? He's getting stuff that he's barely even asking for, and now he's going to take down the government on something that no one's ever heard of? It's just not going to happen. It's just absolutely not going to happen.
Corey, you said you couldn't blame the guy in some ways. Yeah. Tell me why. And I guess that what I'm trying to get at the heart of, and I'll come back to you in a roundabout way around what would have been the topic area you, as Jagmeet Singh, would have chosen to make this threat more credible. But why can't you blame the guy? And is that like you softening the ground for saying that this is actually a good strategy on his part or a decent strategy on his part?
Well, let's start here. Why I don't blame him. He needs to get into this conversation. We talked last time about how the Liberals are looking for a 5-point bump in the polls. I went to 338 mm-hmm. Canada, you know, Philippe Fournier's site, and just wanted to get a sense of, is there any sense of any early motion on that? And arguably, there's a point or two that the Liberals have picked up over the past month, but it seems to be entirely at the expense of the NDP. Or at least that's one way you can interpret the results when you kind of squint and look at it there. And that's funny, because it doesn't fundamentally change the math. It's still sitting there at like 98-99%. You know, conservative majority likelihood if an election was held today. But that's a challenge if you're Jagmeet Singh. Arguably, as Stephen has said, you have managed to get a few things out of this budget. And this was Stephen's concern with supply and confidence all along. Nobody has given you any credit for it. And the conversation is entirely about the Liberals and the Conservatives. And what do you do? Like, you almost need people like us on podcasts like this talking about how those big things in the budget that people are talking about were actually Singh's. So what the hell is he doing on this other stuff? Like,
this is very meta of the type of credit.
Sort of. I mean, like, the uncharitable way to say it is he is having a bit of a pout and threatening to bring down the government because everyone's forgetting about his essential role in this. The more charitable way to put it is he is reminding people that he is pulling strings on this particular matter. And certainly every article has mentioned the things that he has managed to get out of the budget. So perhaps it is good strategy.
Yeah.
Carter, you had your hand
up. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, this was always a bad strategic choice. You know, a long-term supply agreement was a bad strategic choice. And from bad strategy comes bad tactics. And so now he's done a bad strategy. You know, he's making a bad tactical decision that is absolutely transparent. If I was in the Trudeau government, I'd be like, go ahead, bring us down on this, right? It is not something that the general population is going to turn their backs on and say, oh, I'm really glad that Jagmeet Singh has opened this up. I think, in fact, Singh's going to get blamed if this goes down, and this might actually benefit the Liberals. Now, it might benefit the Liberals to the tune of 10 or 15 extra seats, but it certainly wouldn't. Yeah. I don't think it benefits the Liberals to government. But it's not this isn't a very good strategy. It hasn't been a good strategy since it was first announced.
Carter, I'm going to stick with you on this. I like Corey's framing. He's trying to get into the conversation. He's trying to take credit. Do you agree with that? Do you agree that those goals, at least those goals, are noble for Jagmeet Singh? That as the leader of the NDP, that those, despite the fact you don't love this arrangement, that those would be proper political and strategic goals for him to pursue?
Sure. Do it this way then. If you want to get into the conversation,
yeah, that's my follow-up.
I am not prepared to support this budget as of right now, because, you know, talk about a weak swing, talk about a tepid position on pharmacare. This is something that we really pushed for, and we got diabetes and contraception.
They didn't get diabetes and contraception, but I understood. Yes, like they got coverage for diabetes and contraception.
No, I think that Jagmeet Singh literally got contraception and has diabetes.
As a result of this budget.
As a result of this budget.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bold take.
Don't put words in my mouth, Zane.
Bold take from a curious man. Yeah.
There's a lot of sugar in the budget. Yeah, it depends.
There's a lot of sugar in the budget.
A lot of fat, a lot of sugar.
You landed it, Zane. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. I was like, what, diabetes? What's the connection? Oh, there you go.
Go after heart medication. Go after stroke medication. There's a million different things. You go after antidepressants.
Okay, but you know the political reality is that they arranged, negotiated that deal together on fire, right?
Dear.
And I know you're going to go back to the root of it, being like, oh, it's all about a supply and cost. Okay, given the reality of where you are, Carter, if you find the goals of credit and conversation noble and proper, what would you have done? You can't just be like, I'm going to go after pharmacare, a deal I also helped negotiate. Like that, I appreciate that if that were the reality of the supply and confidence weren't there. But it
that
is.
Applies,
it's one you have to deal with.
That applies to the whole fucking budget. You're in the room for the whole budget being developed, right? You don't get to say, well, we're not going to criticize the pharmacare because we were in the room when that was developed, when the whole fucking budget has been developed on your watch. You have been involved in negotiations for months on this budget. You put in your red lines, you got your red lines, and now you're defining something else. You may as well get the media on something that fucking matters instead of something that doesn't matter.
Credit and conversation, Corey, how would you have done it if you were advising Singh?
Credit conversation? I don't know. I mean, I'm not actually that negative on his ability to try to get the credit conversation at this particular moment. There are fundamental challenges that have led him to this point of despair, but from budget onward, he hasn't done a terrible job of trying to shoehorn himself into the conversation. You go to your beloved National News Watch this evening, and the first two articles are both about Jagmeet Singh. They're talking about whether he would support carbon tax increases. They're talking about whether he'll support the budget at all. And so I'm not calling the game. It's one day, and it happens to be a very random time to be looking at these things, but he is in the conversation, and that's not nothing. So this is, I'm not sure that I want to defend this any more than I just want to just not let Carter get away with entirely throwing it into the mud, because I don't think it's a great strategy, but I don't think he's done a terrible job post-budget of getting
the whole supply and confidence agreement has been a disaster.
You know, I didn't think it would be at the start, but I have to admit, whether it was the concept or the execution, they have not played that well as the NDP. And we do now have a body of evidence.
Explain to me why.
Well, because look where they are in the polls. Like normally you would anticipate some sort of movement, but it seems like they've got a certain group of people between like 15 and 20% of Canadians who will vote NDP. And that's it, right? And arguably, we've seen in the past couple of weeks, maybe even that's being dented down a little bit as people start saying, well, better support the Liberals. And that's not great. And it does sort of look reminiscent right now of the Lib Dems in the UK and how they supported a Conservative government and were absolutely shattered because of it, right? You know, they were the junior partner. All of the glory went to the senior party. All of the blame went to them.
Carter, I'm going to ask you the Liberal response here. What should it be? The current response is Chrystia Freeland meeting with the NDP finance critic. What should the Liberal response here be? Should it be more diplomatic, like I just explained to you? Should it be public? Should it just be ignoring what Jagmeet Singh says? Because, you know, we all know what's happening here. Is there any threat to them? And if there's no threat, is there any gain to them for going after Singh in some way or for trying to make hay out of this for their political benefit. Give me the optimal liberal response.
Well, I think that, you know, I don't think there's a real threat, because ultimately I think this is mutually assured destruction. If Sagan was to take this to an election, I think he gets decimated. I think the liberals get decimated. And I think that Singh is in a position where he knows that. This is the little boy who cried wolf. And Singh's just, you know, he's screaming at the top of his lungs, but absolutely no one's going to be listening to this. So meet with the NDP finance critic. Make it look like you're doing some work. Make it look like you give a shit. But at the end of the day, I don't give a shit. And in a private meeting with the NDP finance critic, I might say, yeah, you guys have got, you know, if you want to do this, do it. We're voting in, I don't know how long until they vote, Corey, do you? No. Off the top of your head? In 2 weeks, you get your chance to vote, but we're not changing this budget.
Corey, your thoughts on the liberals, and I'm going to dovetail a second question for you as well to start answering. Can Pierre Poilievre take any advantage of this division in the liberal NDP government that he sees? So first liberals, then conservatives.
Well, I'll tease out the conservatives, and the answer is yeah, there's absolutely opportunity here for him. But in terms of what the liberals should do, ultimately, if you know where the New Democrats are trying, like, let's put it this way. If you believe, as I do, that this is a bluff, and if, like me, you think, well, they are just trying to get the media attention that would otherwise go to you, you can't give them the media attention. You have to make the moment as undramatic as possible. And so I think you do see the liberals trying to do this by saying, well, we think everybody should vote for this budget. Yeah, we're happy to meet with anybody on this particular moment. You don't want to provide that point of conflict that's going to drive the next three media stories. You rob them of that. You make this a not dramatic moment. You make sure your caucus knows the same. And then at best, Singh gets a day of this. And there's nowhere else for it to go. Maybe it's this day plus some commentary the day after, but there's nothing beyond that. And that's probably in your interest if you're the liberals. Certainly, you don't want to make it look like your government is actually at risk and drive all of that media conversation that might, again, remind people of the New Democrats' role in this, you know, in this particular introduction of PharmaCare and this particular introduction of the, you know, this school nutrition program. Now, if you're the conservatives, is there an advantage here? Yeah, I mean, this is the problem with Singh's move here. If you go a week out one way, like to before this all, you can start entertaining arguments like Stevens, which is this entire process has not been great for them. They have not done a great job of capturing political credit. Now, you can argue, scored some big policy wins, probably for the next 30 years. New Democrats will point back to them, you know, especially in 30 years, they'll point back to them. But when you point forward a little bit too, it's like, okay, like, play this forward. Now you are suggesting the carbon tax shouldn't go up. You're suggesting that the Liberal government should go down. That's giving Pierre Poilievre so much to work with. You're validating this particular argument for him. You're making it that much less likely that, let's put it this way. You go this far as Singh and say, I don't know if I can follow on these carbon tax increases. I don't even know if the carbon tax is really where we want to be, as so many in his book said. And then you keep supporting it. Well, you're kind of blowing your own dick off, aren't you? You know, just you know, I mean, I think that's a technical term, but yeah, that's what we would say.
It is a technical term, usually generally used in like the finance world. Yeah,
exactly. And then the kind of the corollary there is, you've talked about whether this budget should be supported or not. And you have an opportunity for them to say, oh, the New Democrats know it's a bad budget, but they're too scared. You know, like you are hurting the liberals. You know that. That's, you're trying to get some of the credit. But the main benefactor is probably the conservatives.
Carter, do you see room for Poilievre? And even if there is, should he execute on that room? Or is it just better to leave this particular 24, 36, 72-hour story alone?
I don't think this is playing in his message box. I think that this is outside of where he can score points, and I think that he's just crushing on the carbon tax, and Trudeau and Singh need to be viewed as the carbon tax duo, and they don't need to be dragged into social policy at all. Just keep fighting on the ground that you're winning on. There's just no need for Pierre Poilievre to jump into this fight. They're having a fight amongst themselves. Just keep hammering them on carbon tax.
I think.
Corey?
I don't know about that. If I was Pierre Poilievre, do you know what I would be seriously entertaining right now, Stephen?
What is that?
Supporting an increased disability benefit.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Just to put the cat amongst the pigeons.
Why not?
I think I get it. Carter doesn't understand. So for his sake and the audience's sake, can you explain?
Well, sure. I mean, one of the...
This is classic kleptomania, right? Like the classic, you know, someone has an idea, I'm going to steal it, and I'm going to try to fuck him over because of it.
Yeah, it's a little more awkward. It's a little more than kleptomania. You right now, if there is a...
Well, those are Carter's words, right? Like, that's what Carter would say, right?
Yeah, that's what I would say.
I understand it fully. Yeah.
But Pierre Poilievre, if there's a knock against him, it's kind of that he's a, you know, the classic non-caring conservative, right? And that this is all about the taxes, and it gets him a great opportunity to say, no, you know, this is about people struggling. This is a government that is not done right by people with disabilities. And so we agree with the New Democrats, and we think that this should be about, like, if you were Pierre Poilievre and you used your pulpit to elevate it and you had Canadians everywhere saying this budget's an outrage because it doesn't support disabled people, wow, you've put Jagmeet Singh in one hell of a box. Like, one hell of a box, because then he's got to eat shit and back down from his own ultimatum or his own thing that he says he's worried about and move on with his life.
Game that out for me. Who is Jagmeet Singh to the Conservatives? I guess is like the higher order question here, right? Like, should he be someone they try to screw over on a timely and daily basis? Like, no. There's multiple schools of thought of who he is to them.
But he's not. They're not trying to screw him over. They're trying to make it they're trying to make it very hard for them to continue to prop up the Liberals. And if in the process they make people think that they have a heart, I don't know that there's a lot of harm in that, right? And
Carter, do you like it?
I don't like it at all. I get what Corey's trying to do. He's trying to make things difficult for the New Democrats. But why do I give a shit about the New Democrats at this stage? The New Democrats and the Liberals together.
No, but in fairness, he answered that. It's by proxy making the arrangement more difficult. The arrangement you hate, the supply and confidence.
Hang on, do I hate it? If I'm Pierre Poilievre, do I hate this? Do I hate not going to an election right now? Like, do I want to be in an election next week or 2 weeks from now? I'm not sure that I do.
Interesting.
I think I'm pretty happy right where I am, just banging on the drum and making sure that, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Trudeau. I mean, elections are dangerous times. Why would I be pushing myself into an election that before I absolutely need to?
Because you get to be prime minister early.
Let's just test some assumptions. We haven't done this in a while, and you've brought up an interesting one. If Pierre Poilievre could be prime minister tomorrow, if he could call an election tomorrow, should he want that? Carter, I think I'm hearing a no from you. Corey, am I hearing a yes from you?
Of course. Best day in opposition doesn't come close to the worst day in government.
And so, Carter, what's – because I'm kind of with Corey. If Pierre could be PM tomorrow, if we could have an election starting tomorrow, I think the ultimate winner is Pierre Poilievre. Every day he waits, it seems like it's the potential to erode whatever image he's built of himself – is greater than the advantage he's built for himself over the last several months.
Your number one issue is the carbon tax. You're going to go into an election on something that you don't really support, which is a disability benefit, and people are going to be talking about the wrong topic. This isn't the time to be playing games. This is the time to be putting your foot on the throat of your opposition. And Pierre Poilievre is so close to having the foot.
Would he ever be blamed for the government's fall on a disability credit?
That would be the focal point of the media.
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't think so. Just because I don't think that the 1980 election hinged on like the gas tax, right? Which is what brought it down. Joe Clark government down. But second of all,
that's the election you may remember where Joe Clark blew his dick off.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Second of all, wow, it's going to take a moment to get past that one. Second of all, is that so bad? Because you just elevate it to be a bigger thing about affordability. Like, it is too expensive. Trudeau's Canada, there is not enough economic opportunity for disabled people. It has become too expensive for disabled people. They're now having to pay this carbon tax. Like, you make it into a broader affordability, a broader housing, a broader carbon tax argument. I think it ladders pretty nicely up to things that he's already talking about. And people will forget that that was kind of the, you know, the point within the bigger point very quickly in a campaign. Very quickly.
I don't know. You're building a whole house of cards. You don't need a house of cards.
It's never going to happen. Like, we're way down.
You don't need a
theoretical room. I just wanted to get your guys' sense on the theory here. You know what? I'm going to ask you one more about this, which is, I know the Liberals are in a hole. We all know the Liberals are in a hole. But the question I have is a very, higher order one, which is, who is Jagmeet Singh to the Liberals? They have seen this guy as a co-conspirator, in many ways propping up his government in a formal capacity. But he hasn't taken off. And if you're the Liberals, are you seeing Jagmeet Singh as someone that you can actually give credit to, that you're able to kind of elevate and pay no penalty for and look magnanimous to? Or is that a risk? What's your kind of, like, if you're inside that Liberal war room, what's your rule or your line on Jagmeet Singh? How are you thinking of him these days? I'm actually, like, I know how you think of him in a policy and governmental sense. How are you thinking of him in a clean, crisp, one-line political sense today, Carter?
You're thinking of him the way the Americans think of Canadians. They don't think of them at all, right? That is the nature of, I mean, it is just not part of the Liberals' thinking on this. Like, all that a New Democratic vote is in this election is a place to park either a wasted Conservative vote or a potential Liberal vote. And that's what, I mean, they're looking at it as a vote bank. So you don't lift up the guy who's holding your vote bank. You marginalize him. You ignore him. You make sure that he doesn't get any oxygen. And he got a little bit of oxygen over the last 2 days. Well, now you got to make sure that doesn't happen again. Good for him. He got some oxygen. Very pleased. Never let that happen again.
Corey, strategically wise, strategically arrogant, strategically naive, how would you classify Carter's analysis here of what he would suggest the one line on Jagmeet Singh in the Liberal war room would be in terms of how we think about him?
Yeah, I mean, I agree in a general sense. If you're fighting for first, you're not fighting the party in third. It's as simple as that. And it would be a real mistake to be focusing your energy and your efforts on Jagmeet Singh's NDP. And frankly, you would basically be admitting the campaign is over and you're just trying to, you're pulling the copper out of the walls at this point. You're just trying to get whatever you can. Because honestly, if you're all of a sudden worried about whether those votes are going to the New Democrats or yourself, by and large, and like focusing fire, I want to be clear. Like, we're not even talking about like a vote collapse. You've got to give us your votes so that the Conservatives don't win strategy, which is a pretty classic Liberal strategy. But actually targeting Singh in any way, shape, or form, you're in a lot of trouble at that point. The math just does not work. At this moment, Liberal plus New Democrat is not greater than Conservative. You've got to find a way that you compete for the bulk of the votes. And if you are sitting there thinking about how you manage the Singh part of the equation, you're probably already lost.
Corey, you said you wouldn't focus energy or effort on Jagmeet Singh. Would you go so far as to say any effort or energy on Jagmeet Singh from a political perspective? Or I'm just trying to understand, yeah. I get it. Like, the first or third, it's nice. Like, I get it. It makes sense. But in terms of mind share, give me that a second.
Yeah, like, you're going to sit there and you're going to be thinking about it if you're part of the organizer class, if you're part of the strategist. You don't want to look like you're thinking about them, but obviously you've got to look at some of those equations and how you most marginalize them from the conversation and most make sure you get credit for all of those things. I think, again, like, I hate to be a broken record on this, but it's sort of depends on what the Liberals are planning to run on next election. And if you are running on being the progressive government, and that seems very clear at this point based on this budget, right? Look at us. We're the government that will give you all the things the governor Pierre Poilievre won't. You'd need to box out the New Democrats. You can't have them having any of the credit on that front. You know, if you're looking for a different type of election, there is a different universe where you almost want the New Democrats to get credit for the more left-wing ideas. So you can say, well, we wouldn't have had to do that. Like, imagine a totally different universe, I mean, right? Where the Liberals are neck and neck with the Conservatives. Canadians generally, though, are a little concerned that there's too much left-wing policy in the Liberals, then you could imagine an election where they say, yeah, okay, there was PharmaCare and there was this money for this new program, but we only had to do that because the New Democrats. If you want us to have a government that's a little more moderate, you've got to give us a majority government. Like, you could imagine that election occurring at some point too, but that doesn't seem to be the type of election we're in.
We're going to leave that segment there, moving on to our next segment. Stephen Carter, thank you for that yawn. Our next segment, the Great Generational Bake-Off. Stephen Carter, the budget, it's baked, it's out there.
Yeah.
It is now being spun. It is now being sloganeered, and I find that fascinating. Every time out of a budget, there's a theme that's trying to be pushed. In this particular case, Carter and Corey, I want you guys to test, give me an analysis on what the Liberals are pushing here. And here's the two words that they're pushing out of the budget. Generational fairness.
Sure.
And I'm curious if you like it. Like, I know we talked about, and if anyone hasn't listened to our episode where we go deep on the investments that the Liberals are trying to make, whether they, you know, close the deal on telling a good comprehensive story chapter by chapter around one demo group or one sort of core issue or problem, listen to that episode. We won't get into it here. Now, I'm talking about the sales of it, right? Corey, do you like generational fairness as a slogan, as a North Star in terms of what they're trying to sell coming out of this budget? It goes very much to another episode we recorded about Gen Z and millennials, but talk to me about your feelings here. The conservatives have had their three words: axe the tax, spike the hike. The Liberals, I'm not saying this is going to make it into a lectern during an election, but it could be one of those test cases where generational fairness is something that they're pushing for. Give me your thoughts on it.
Here's my challenge with it. So you both know I have 412 children, right?
Something and like that, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Normally, when I'm having conversations about what's fair, somebody is feeling like I've done something very unfair, right? I've taken something from somebody, I've given it to somebody else. That somebody else is generally pretty happy. The first one, generally pretty unhappy. And I would broaden that point and say, when you use fairness the way the Liberals are, it does somewhat suggest winners and losers, right? And where I am a bit challenged with that when it comes to the Liberals is, and we've talked about this, when you look at their kind of the purest form of their coalition, their 2015 coalition, it was, you know, they were pretty strong across all age groups. And I think that if you get into a situation where it looks like the Liberals are making decisions at the expense of older Democrats, this is always the problem with housing, by the way. We've talked about this 100 times, but if you get into a place where it starts to look like the Liberals are making decisions at the expense of older generations, I think they're in a lot of trouble. Those generations tend to vote. Those generations are usually pretty receptive to the Liberals, quite a establishment institutional party. So I can't say I love it, but again, I don't have the polling they do. I'm not seeing the things they see. My gut reaction, though, is it divides in a way that is not necessarily going to increase the size of their coalition.
Carter, top line thoughts. Two words, generational fairness. What are your thoughts?
Really not very good. There was a time when Ed Stelmach ran on Our Fair Share. Do you remember Our Fair Share? We were talking about royalty payments from oil and gas companies. We were going to make sure that they were fair because it was Albertans' resource that they were taking out. And there was a definitive winner and a definitive loser. The definitive winner was us, our fair share. The definitive loser was them. They're going to pay more. They're going to pay into it. Generational fairness, Corey's not wrong. Fairness is one of those really interesting values that just about everybody shares fairness, but they bring their own perspective to fairness. And so if it's not my perspective of fairness, then how is it actually fair? Right? So right now we have a housing debate going on at City Calgary where everybody's talking about fairness, 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 and it's all selfishness. So is this generational fairness going to overcome that selfishness? Or would they have been better at saying something along the lines of, you know, what's best for you, right? This is a best for you budget. This is a budget about what's best for you, right? Because then I'm a character in the story, whereas generational fairness, I just don't think puts me as a character in this story at all. I don't know which fucking generation I am. You know, maybe you do, Zane, because you're a millennial. But the rest of us, you know, like, is this something that's fair for me or not? I don't know.
Well, okay, Corey, I'm going to come to you in a second, but I want to clarify a point on Carter's, like, subjectivity of fairness. Isn't that a strategic, like, benefit? That it because it has an open-ended interpretation of seeing it in your own worldview, that it could mean whatever your worldview means of fairness? Like, I know you're saying, like, perhaps the opposite, but I wanted to just push you a bit on that. Like, isn't fairness in its, like, even its moral sense in terms of what it means, isn't its subjectivity a political benefit? And you're, like, shaking your head vigorously no to that. Tell me why.
Fairness being subjective is not a good thing, because if you're not seeing yourself on the right side of fairness, then you're on the side of unfairness, right? If someone else is getting something you're not getting, right? Like, I don't get any of the pharmaceutical benefits, right? Oh, it's not fair, right? It may be fair based on looking at what people need, but it's not fair from the point of view and the perspective that I bring. Right. So everybody brings their own perspective on fairness. You know, there's that classic, cartoon of fairness versus equality or whatever it was. Fairness versus where everybody gets one box to see over the fence, but they can't see over the fence. One person doesn't need a box. One person needs one box. One person needs two boxes. That's what this fairness indicates, that in some fashion it's able to distribute the resources properly and make everybody happy. Fairness is about happiness, and this just simply does not make everybody happy.
Corey, your thoughts on this?
Well, I agree a lot with the idea that the budget could have been framed in a way that made it more likely that you were going to see yourself in it. And that's generally what we do when we build these budgets and give them names. And the names are usually, like, so generic that you find yourself accidentally reusing ones used by other governments, like Working for You.
Securing, you know, our future.
All in this together. Securing our future. A classic. Variants of these, right? Bust out the thesaurus, find a different word for secure, find a different word for future, right? Instead of securing our future, all of a sudden it becomes strengthening tomorrow. You know, like, they don't say anything or mean anything, or they aren't anything. But one of the benefits of that is, well, the budget is a communications exercise. And while the budget needs kind of a key message, I've never been convinced budgets need slogans, right? And I often find that the slogans are pretty forgettable. When you create a slogan like that, in particular, this idea of generational fairness, first of all, I do think that there's a certain... I think that it's pretty easy if you're a 25-year-old staffer to say, fuck yeah, right? But if you're a 55-year-old Stephen Carter, 75, actually, I believe.
80.
Yeah, somewhere around there. You're kind of like, fuck you, not fuck yeah, right? This idea... that all of a sudden there's somebody who's going to have their hand in your pocket, right? Or otherwise make things difficult for you. And I just wonder if it was worth it. Like, does it get you as much as it puts at risk? And are there people now who were not going to vote liberal who are now going to vote liberal because you've used this phrase, generational fairness? And if the answer is no, then I think it's kind of low reward, high risk. Because even though I don't think everybody over the age of 30 has abandoned the Liberals because of the name of their budget, I don't want to overstate this. Yeah. I really don't. It just seems like it's getting you into a dangerous place, right? And a place where you're somewhat exposed when you didn't need to be, right? Because you didn't have to say generational fairness. That has a have-not connotation. You could have just talked about the things you're doing for people, making life more affordable, no matter where you are in your life. Here's what we're doing for you if you're 20 and you're at school. Here's what we're doing for you if you're 30 and trying to buy a new home. You're 40 and you've got a kid in elementary. Well, there's your school lunch program, right? Now you're 50. All of a sudden, you've got different concerns still. That PharmaCare program is becoming really important to you. And hey, guess what? Here you are at 60. And at 60, we've got between, you know, CPP2 and all of these other things, we're really doing what we can to secure your retirement. Like, there is a way you could have done that with the same components you have in the budget here, but you didn't, right? Instead, you sort of carved out, and I appreciate that politics is based on wedges, but I'll go back to what I said at the start. I don't think this is the wedge you want.
Yeah. It's not also a wedge. Because this is a story. You always go back. Corey always says a budget is a communications device. And I always say that we communicate best in stories. I don't see any stories in my bookshelf called generational fairness. Right. it's just not something that's going to grab me. And I'm going to go, oh, that's the one I want to grab from Indigo or Chapters. This is for me, making my life more affordable becomes a story. Right. Like there's different ways of telling that story and there's different audiences for that story. And I just think this underlines one of the liberals' continued failings. They don't understand story and they don't understand character and they don't understand how to put it all into something that Canadians will actually hear.
Securing the future, strengthening tomorrow. My favorite, of course, is hardening Thursday. I feel like that is... probably the best. And if Zane Milgee ever runs, the platform will be titled Hardening Thursday. Can you just make sure that Discord takes a note of that?
That can't be misconstrued, I'm sure. Yeah.
No. Hardening Thursday is correct. Here's my issue. I have not seen the Liberals try to play ball in a long time, and I like that they're trying to play ball here. I like that they're trying to get into short, pithy stories. I see the math in terms of what they're trying to do. And I know we said, and we probably all three of us to some degree agreed that the execution of the Gen Z millennial budget was left a lot to be desired, but we could kind of see what they're trying to do, right? But Carter, I'm now almost testing and questioning assumptions based on both of your analysis, which is they're clearly trying to frame this as a millennial Gen Z budget. Was that a mistake or was that something they had to do with this moment in time? And I know we're playing a bit of like Monday morning quarterback, but there is something interesting about it. The conventional wisdom says that the political universe does not revolve around Gen Z and millennial. Like, obviously, it's more of a, seniors, boomer, the political orbit is over there.
They're Gen trying X to just forgotten again, Steve.
Well, as they should
be. As always, as always.
Carter... We thought that in some degree this is what they were trying to do, maybe even what they had to do. Was this a mistake with a bit of hindsight?
No, it wasn't a mistake to go after the younger voters. Younger voters are hitting the sweet spot for Liberals. They've got young children, they've got young families. There's a whole bunch of things that you can sell that demographic on. The problem was... you're saying what you're giving the title of the tactic your definitive narrative function, right? The title of the tactic is we're going to go after the generation. It's going to be a generational fairness. That's what we're going to do. Well, okay, but you don't have to name the fucking budget after that. You don't have to name your communication strategy after that. There's a whole bunch of things that you could do that would emphasize the generational fairness in going after these younger generations that don't make it, that have a story element to it or that will appeal to the people that you're actually trying to communicate with. This is a communications exercise. Corey's right. I hate saying that, but Corey's right. It's a communications exercise. Communicate, for fuck's sake.
Shoulder shrug. Anything else? I just saw a shoulder shrug from you. Come in hot, but you've lost steam.
You gave me the space to do it, but I was like, I agree. The shrug was like, what are you going to do? I could get kind of picky about it. It does seem a little reactive to me to say, oh my God, the bottom's falling out with young people. There's all of these articles written about how now there are... Canadians aged 20 to 30 who are about to vote for Pierre Poilievre. What the hell is happening? So then all of a sudden the budget comes out and it's about generational fairness. That does seem a little reactive. One of the challenges I have right now in assessing whether anything the Liberals is doing is good or likely to bear fruit in the future is probably a better way to put it, is it's really tough when a party is only at about 20% in the polls to know where to from here, right? Because it's like, because my first reaction to like, oh yeah, grab grab the Gen Z vote. Well, fuck, what's that going to get you? Even if you're perfectly successful, you're not even going to get your 5 points that you're talking about, right? It's just not going to happen. And so it's hard not to be a little bit cynical about any of these things because none of them on their own seem like they're enough. And I guess, again, that's why I have trouble with anything that looks like it's dividing, because it does feel like you're kind of pushing all of your chips in on this particular hand. And what? So what? So you win the hand. So what? What do you get for that? So fucking what? And that's a problem the Liberals have right now. It's not clear to me what their path to victory is. And if they start doing things that look like they're picking off a demographic that even if they are good at it, right, even if they succeed, it will not be enough. It's just hard to look at that and say, job well done. It is. But that doesn't mean it's not job well done when they did that, because maybe they're sitting there with the numbers and saying, this is as good as it gets. This is as good as we can hope this election.
God, that sounds so bleak. We're going to leave that segment there. Moving on to our final segment, Stephen Carter, our over, under, and our lightning round. Of course, we do this for you. We do it near your bedtime so you can be sharp. You can have all your devices off. Your watch turns off so there's no distractions, so you can put all your energy and efforts into this particular segment. Stephen Carter, budget slogans overrated or underrated in your mind?
Slogans are overrated, but stories are not.
Corey, overrated or underrated budget slogans?
For sure overrated, for sure. I've seen so many governments accidentally reuse them. It's just kind of funny at a certain point.
How has Axe the Tax spiked the hype? Would you consider those two to be overrated too, despite their cultural sort of like just pinpoint accuracy that they've hit with? And this is my bias entering that question. But what makes them so different if we've kind of thought slogans, and I'm being reductive here, overall are overrated? Like, how have they worked so well? The guy literally shows up and says, you know, 6 words and the room goes nuts.
Yeah. Well, part of it is it does say something. The other thing is it captures a bit of the zeitgeist. Like, here's the thing about Axe the Tax. That's a slogan the conservatives can use. It's not a slogan the liberals can use. It's not a slogan the new Democrats can use. It's not a slogan the Greens can use. It's their slogan. And so I think a slogan that can really only be used by one party just generally has a better chance at having some, you know, a fight in life. That is not true of generational fairness, by the way. You could literally imagine any of the parties having a budget called generational fairness with different things in it.
Fair.
But generational fairness. You could imagine generational fairness being about, you know, protecting and doing right by our seniors, for example. That could be generational fairness too. So that's not a really great option there. The other is you do have to acknowledge the power of the rhyme, the short, pithy thing. It just works. And it only works for them.
You know what's so fascinating, Carl? I'll let you have a shake at this too, is that like the specificity and how small the carbon tax is versus how massively ambitious generational fairness is. And I know this is not a fair comparison, but like generational fairness, to your point, could mean anything. But also, even if it's, who cares what jersey color puts it on a slogan? It probably is like a massively ambitious thing to be like, we want generational fairness versus Axe one tax that has a negligible, but more than likely positive impact on your life with the rebate. Like, it's really interesting in terms of like, the honing in and the small versus large and the penalization on large versus narrow. And once again, I know that's simplistic too. Carter, what makes Axe Attacks Spike the Hike work?
Well, I think that people are able to focus on small ideas and small things. Like when you look at the Dunning-Kruger effect, one of my very favorite things in the whole world, there's the peak of Mount Stupid, right? And you don't need to understand very much to be in favor of axing the tax. You just need to know one thing, axe the tax, right? And knowing one fact, as we've demonstrated on this podcast time and again by just having Corey as a strategist, is a powerful, powerful tool when applied properly. Just knowing one thing, you can have all the confidence of a Corey Hogan. And that, my friends, is a lot of confidence.
Incredible Lots amounts of confidence. Incredible yeah. amounts of confidence. Hey, Corey, my next question here, overrated or underrated, Jagmeet Singh being non-committal on keeping the scheduled raise on the carbon tax? He's been a bit mealy-mouthed, and then he's been kind of flip-floppy. Overrated or underrated at the end of the day, Jagmeet Singh stands on this?
I understand that he's going for kind of a strategic ambivalence where he's got all sorts of options going forward, depending on how things unfold. Or at least I understand that's what he's trying to do here. But unfortunately for him, he is kind of synonymous thanks to years of conservative branding and the simple reality that his party has propped up the government on carbon tax increases, ones that have actually occurred. And this is not going to be an election where people are talking about hypothetical future rebates. I mean, yes, people will talk about how they might grow, but people will be talking about the actual tax as it is, right? Like the actual tax, the actual rebate structure as it is, not the one that, you know, might be scaring them in the future. And so I just don't think it's going to work for him. I think all that's going to happen is he's going to undercut people's confidence in the carbon tax, and it's still going to stick to the New Democrats to a certain extent. Like, imagine a local debate. Imagine it's a three-way race, liberal, conservative, New Democrat, and you have the conservative saying, axe the tax, right? And you have the liberal saying, the tax is the right thing. The rebate is actually good for you. You're better off. And then you have the New Democrat saying, what? Like, they can't, like, they're like, it was good to this level, but no further. No comment on whether the rebate is actually bigger or not. Like, how does that work? Like, what a nightmare of a message track. And yeah, you don't want to be in that space at all. You don't want to be in the conservative space on this thing, and you're going to try to change the subject. But it feels like it's too big of an issue to be that flimsy on, right? Just pick a side and move on with your life. But to be in the middle, you're just going to take it from both sides.
Carter? Yeah. Overrated, underrated. His non-committal stance on the carbon tax increase.
Non-committal. I mean, it just seems to, I can't possibly have an opinion if Jagmeet Singh doesn't have an opinion. You know, like, he's my leader. He's the person I follow now that I've bought a New Democratic Party membership.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, Carter, okay, let me move on to our next one, because we're getting nothing out of you. This clarity of mind that I was expecting. No, I got it too. This clarity of mind I was expecting, I'm really not getting. Carter, Bill Morneau was slamming Chrystia Freeland's budget as a threat to investment, economic growth. Are you in or are you out on recently has-been politicians talking smack against their own party? Or in his case, maybe former party. Like, we don't really know where he stands. He didn't leave in like such happy circumstances. Are you in or are you out? Do you like the smack, the trash talk? Are you like a Kevin Garnett fan when it comes to this sort of stuff? Or are you out on this sort of behavior? And are you more of like the classic statesman, like, you know, as soon as you leave, you shut the fuck up?
Listen, it would be hypocritical for me to tell anybody when they leave, they should shut the fuck up. So naturally, what I'm going to say is when you leave, you should shut the fuck up.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Corey, are you in or are you out on Morneau trying to do some NBA 2K, you know, smack talk against Freeland?
Yeah, I don't, it's an interesting one. I actually think he is given a respectful amount of time that his opinion shouldn't be disallowed. I think it's a bit of a joke. Right. And I don't think he's hurting the Liberals by him, the guy that the Liberals didn't want as finance minister anymore, basically coming in with his piles of wealth and suggesting this is a bad thing. He might even be right from a financial perspective, but he kind of plays to a type. And I don't think he's hurting the Liberals, but it's fine that he's talking, in my opinion, just fine. McKenna talks all the time about the deficiencies that the Liberals have on the environment, and she left under much better circumstances. You don't give up having opinions when you retire from elected life.
Carter, take us local. Is upzoning going to happen here in Calgary?
How would I know? I'm just a guy. You know, I've not been doing anything. Yes, it's going to be fine.
Has Singh told you what to do? Oh, Carter!
Okay. Carter, We literally were just, oh my God, Jesus Christ. Read the cues, man. Read the cues.
Now we got to blew that. Can we retape that? Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Carter, take us local. Is upzoning, rezoning, whatever you call it, is it going to happen here?
Listen, who am I to be committed to any of this? Yeah, it's going to happen.
Fucking guy. We're going to leave it there. Yeah. That's a wrap on episode 1299 of The Strategist. My name is Dane Belger. With me, as always, Stephen Carter, Corey Hogan, and we will see you next time.
You didn't want me to play the big showstopper number from Act 1 of The Strategist, the musical?
Oh, yeah. I think we should.
tease them with it, and then we sell it to them afterwards.
Money. It's the currency of shopping. Money. The need is never stopping. Money. Money is the currency of politics. Money's what we need to do our politics. Money is the currency of politics. Money have enough and the campaign just clicks. Money, you can go get it at the bank. Money, your most important platform plank. Money, you gotta pay for that lit drop. Money, get some and watch your campaign pop. But who can give me some money? I really need some money. Money is the currency of politics. Money's what we need to do our politics. Money is the currency of politics. Money have enough and the campaign just clicks.
Oh, that's good.